coach has been telling us all week at practice, we got to stay locked in, and once we get up, we just can't let off the gas pedal.
It's a huge win for our program. We've been close the last couple of years, and we just couldn't ever get over that hump.
This is the SB Live Washington podcast, your weekly conversation about high school sports and the people who play them across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live. We're going to recap what we saw in week two of the high school football season here in Washington. Going to take a very early look at week three, some top storylines, and go over kind of where we were, what we saw, surprises, confirmations in the first kind of second week of our installment of twice weekly podcasts. We'll have a podcast out on Wednesday as well, taking a look at week three with a player interview. So stay tuned for that. I'm joined now by my partner in crime, your pal and mine, the prodigal son of Tacoma, and a senior reporter with SB Live, Todd Millis. Todd, how we doing this week?
Yeah, Andy, you talked a little bit about before we came on about some of the, you know, a lot of great close finish games types. It felt like the haves and the have-nots. Maybe there was a little more separation. You look at O'Day; they won in a shutout. Graham Kapausen won in a shutout. Bellevue won in a shutout. Some of these teams that have sort of made an early move, sort of maybe separating themselves a little bit. Again, it's only week two. I don't want to overreact, but the good teams sort of flexing their muscles here in the second week of the season.
Yeah, no question. I'm just getting back from a road trip. I live in the Portland, Vancouver area and spent the last week venturing east. Saw a really good matchup out in Tri-Cities between Chiawana and Kamiokin, the first kind of big build MCC showdown. That's going to set up, you know, a string of a few of them here in the next the coming weeks. And then we navigated a little bit of the COVID shutdowns that have rocked this state, this high school football season so far. You talk about how, there were a lot of blowouts here in week two. There were a lot of cancellations as well, Todd. And that's almost, you know, the story of the week. I think, you know, in the West Sound, there were a ton of cancellations. There were some games moved around across the state. Teams, if games were canceled early enough, some teams were able to reschedule and find games. And that's just kind of a constant battle. Athletic directors around this state thought that this last year was hard without sports and trying to navigate how this, sports might return in a pandemic and all those rules that entailed. We're still very much in this thing, Todd. Cancellations were happening everywhere. Spokane, Northern Idaho was hit really hard as well. The Battle of the Bell, Meade, Mount Spokane, that first game in the Union Stadium there in that great, great rivalry game that draws as many as 10,000 people in years past. That game was canceled. First an outbreak in Meade's program, then an outbreak in Mount Spokane's program that canceled a reschedule with Coeur d'Alene on Saturday. So, you know, Todd, is it safe to say this is kind of the reality of this season? It might be, you know, a little bit more hectic than we thought even going in.
Well, I think that sort of lends a little bit to some of these lopsided results, Andy. You start your week, you think you're going to play somebody, you get notice, hey, we're shutting down. So it puts kind of coaches in scramble mode. And like you said, Mount Spokane, you know, had two games scheduled and didn't get to play one. But, you know, you only have really four days to kind of get things set up to go play an opponent. So when you find out Wednesday or Thursday, I mean, I know this is the era of huddle and, you know, there's film readily available, but I mean, you look at somebody like Eastlake, they didn't get their game set up till Thursday, maybe Friday. Yeah. So they're almost playing Rainier Beach blind, and same with Rainier Beach, two teams that aren't familiar with each other. So, and in that case, actually, it was a good game. But a lot of these teams are just looking to get a game and get their kids going. And again, that's kind of why I don't like looking too much into what's going on early, unless it's a league game. So, but yes, this is not going away, Andy. This is going to be a challenge all year. I was joking with a coach. I said, boy, I thought you guys made your, you earned your paychecks last spring. I think these these coaches are doubly earning their paycheck in a longer season in the fall with the heavy presence of COVID.
Teams that cancel games reach a point where the amount of players ruled out with COVID makes it so that there's not enough players in either a specific position group or the entire team to suit up and play a game. That doesn't even account, though, all the cancellations and reschedules we're seeing for the amount of programs that are dealing with COVID, whether it's just a case or two, or, you know, we have X amount of starters out. You know, we saw Eastside Catholic in week one found out it was missing 24 players like the night before the game and 10 starters and was able to still field the team and beat Kennedy Catholic, by the way, which is an impressive win. But, you know, considering the circumstance. But the same could be said this week. You know, when I covered Chiawana and Kamiakin on Thursday, Chiawana was already young, already short-manned, missing Isaiah Anderson, stud defensive end who's going to Oregon State for wrestling. He's out for the year. And there were just a lot of pieces that needed to step up quickly for the Riverhawks. And then they find out they're missing one of their best players on defense due to contact tracing in the middle of the park, a linebacker. And you know, that's an impact. It might just be one player, but that's the center of your defense. Same could be said when I saw Eastmont play on Friday. Eastmont's a run-heavy team and had found success running the ball against Central Valley in week one, beating CV 33-31. And last week on Friday, they have to go on the road and face Gonzaga Prep in a non-league game, and they're down 4 to 5 starters and, you know, 2 of their top 3 running backs. And so that takes away an entire dimension of what they were able to do. And so, you know, it's one thing as a coach to say, okay, you know, we know what we're capable of and we know that we're shorthanded. But as an opponent, like you said, Todd, how do you scout for this? And as, you know, you and I take a look and we update SB Live's classification rankings every Monday and our top 25 rankings, those are things that we just have to be taking into consideration now every week of the season is, are these teams playing at full strength? Because, you know, for the most part, most teams across this state, for whatever reason, one reason or another, there's been a lot of teams that have not been playing at full strength. So we're going to go over real quickly what we saw and where we were. Todd, you were at a few games this week. I know you have multiple states that you oversee the coverage for that keeps you really busy on Friday nights, but you got a chance to get out and see Woodinville over stadium. You saw Bothell beat Tahoma yesterday as we record this on Saturday. You saw that game. I was, like I said, at Kamiak and Chiawana. I was at Gonzaga Prep Eastmont. We had freelancers at Yelm, Mount Si, O'Day, Kennedy. Real quickly, Todd, do you want to just kind of go over what you saw?
Yeah, the Thursday game, Woodinville came down to Stadium Bowl and played Silas, formerly the Wilson Rams. Pretty noticeable. I think you're going to see Wayne Maxwell. He really trusts his first-year quarterback in Theo Grothen, a dual threat who can really push the ball downfield. He took some deep shots. I know that the Rams were loaded up to play the run, but he showed no hesitation in letting Theo, you know, dial it up downfield. And he's got some pretty good receivers: Lucas Dahl, Carson Ackerman, Max Finney had caught a couple touchdowns in that game. He's got a big tight end and Bo Graham. It's a little more of a diverse offense than I saw last spring when Woodinville played Bothell the second time there in that shortened season. But again, maybe not the lockdown type defense that I'm used to in a Wayne Maxwell Woodinville team. But offensively, they've got a little juice. They got a little versatility, and they kind of showcased that on Thursday night. And then, you know, Saturday, again, it was sort of a 4A Kinko themed weekend in covering some games, and got the chance to see Bothell and you know, another first year quarterback in Logan Lacio. Was really impressed with him and the progress he's made in a short amount of time. I mean, his story is very, very interesting. He sat out in Hawaii as a junior and just kind of worked with his trainer, and then transferred to Bothell here in August, right before the Lakewood 7-on-7 challenge, and has really almost taken a crash course into learning this offense. Not the easiest offense in the state to learn, this Tom Boehner offense. And I thought he did a pretty good job managing it against a pretty decent Tahoma team on Saturday. Had a one fumble, but three touchdown passes. was able to get to some different reads, very relaxed. But this is an offense that really is sort of driven by a very good offensive line. And then Bryce Coy, the really talented running back. He had a dynamite touchdown run on the first series where he broke a few tackles. He's kind of a longer, leaner, but it's surprisingly kind of a strong runner too. He catches the ball out of the backfield. It's interesting to see Bothell with this offensive backfield. It's a transfer from Hawaii and a first year running back, but I think this has the potential to be a really good backfield given, you know, if the Cougars continue to make the progress they do on a week to week basis. And that showed up a lot on Saturday afternoon. And then I would Gavin Garcia at Tahoma, another one of these really good dual threats. He was over 100 yards rushing, almost 200 yards passing. He was very impressive for the Bears, who I think are sort of a sneaky challenger in the 4A NPSL. We think of Kennedy Catholic, who's off to an 0-2 start. Kentwood's off to an 0-2 start. Federal Way did win, beat Beamer over the weekend, off to a 1-1 start. This is a team I think it's going to beat one of those three teams with Gavin Garcia, a pretty good set of receivers. And if they don't lose any more defense or offensive linemen, I think have enough on the defense side of the ball to not get run over.
You wrote four observations from that Bothell game on Saturday. You can find those on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington and the SB Live Sports app. That's going to be your home for high school sports news and information across this state. You got rankings, of course, coming on Mondays. And we had a lot from this weekend of coverage across the state and some of the top games that SB Live had a chance to be out to or out at. I'm going to start with my Thursday game, Kamiakin, Chiawana. This is a game, Todd, that the past 2 years, I got a chance to go and see this game at Edgar Brown in 2019. And since Richland won that state championship 3 years ago, Chiawana has been the Riverhawks League. And, you know, Kamiakin had been kind of nipping at the heels as that number two. And the past 2 years, this Kamiakin Chiawana game has been low scoring. It's been heavy, heavy defensive performances. A turnover here or there has decided each game. In 2019, it was 10-7 Chiawana. And it was in the spring, it was Chiawana won 15-14 and had a pick six. And, a couple game kind of tipped here or there based off of a defensive play. And so this was a year where Kamiakin, you could tell, was just sick of losing to Chiawana, especially in games. It felt like, it got one or two bad breaks. This is a young Chiawana group. JP Zamora, fourth-year quarterback, formerly a Utah commit. He's a very, very talented quarterback and is still trying to find his weapons out wide and skill guys to replace the Jalen Webbers from last year, to replace the Kobe Youngs and just receivers, who have been so reliable and such playmakers. JP wasn't the problem for Chiawana in this win. Of course, Kamiakin wins 46-24, and this we saw a Kamiakin offense take life, and just take off, take flight, and it was for two reasons. One, it was the weapons that Kamiakin has out wide in the skill positions. We saw an unbelievable performance from Gabe Tahir, who's a standout lockdown corner. He's a name that, we're going to be talking about a lot over these next 2 years. Already has a Penn State offer. He's the younger brother of two-time MCC defending league MVP Tuna Al-Tahir, who's now at Eastern. And Gabe reluctantly is playing receiver this season. Head coach Scott Bigland is like, look, man, we need our best athletes to play both sides of the ball and contribute. We need you to play receiver. And Gabe was a little, he's apprehensive to the position, but not to the challenge of contributing to his team. And you saw that on Thursday. He caught four passes for 126 yards, and including the play of the week, the play of the year maybe so far, in a 42-yard touchdown run where it'll be in SB Live's top highlights of the week, so stay tuned for that. But he basically catches the ball, Todd, on a screen, and he's got like three defenders closing down on him on the left side, and he somehow backs himself out of that, weaves his way through just a sea of white and ends up bursting to the other side of the field for a 42-yard touchdown run. Those are the types of plays that, this Kamiokan team can make. And it has a playmaker and a quarterback in Henry Mercado, who's a third-year starter, has had a little bit of an up and down last couple seasons, just to, you know, kind of not sugarcoated at all. And a third year running this offense, he's a senior and he's playing like it. He had just a tremendous game on Thursday. And I think, you know, I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but if I would imagine, you know, this is validating in a lot of ways, especially when you have a Division I quarterback lining up on the other side of the field and you can look at it and say, look, you know, Mercado completed 13 of 28 attempts for 236 yards and four touchdowns passing. He ran in a 9-yard score in the second half to help pull away, and he received just a ton of praise from Coach Scott Biglin, who was just saying, "Look, you know, he's seeing the field really well. He definitely is. Biglin thinks he's underrated by everybody across the state. He thinks he's the best quarterback in the MCC. And this is a year where Kamiokan's going to get the chance to test itself against really good teams in the MCC before it tunes up for a potential state run. So, I see this as kind of the first shoe to drop in an MCC title race that we thought was going to be a 3-team race all along. Richland, of course, was that team that was the favorite. Kamiokan and Richland play this week, this Friday, on September 17th. Mike Niehold coming off his 100th win there for Richland, a team that has outscored its first two opponents 107-0, Todd. So we thought that this Kamiokan-Chiawana game was going to be potentially a game of the year in the MCC. Try next week. 1 week later in week three, we've got Richland-Kamiokan.
Yeah, it seems like there's a game of the week. when you have four teams that are this good in a league, 3A Kennewick and the three 4A schools you mentioned, it just seems like there's a state game of the week somewhere in the Tri-Cities. But this could very well be the state game of the fall from the Tri-Cities, this Richland-Kamiokan game. Now, Kennewick, I'd like to see Kennewick kind of get going a little bit better on offense. They've kind of won two grinders here in the first 2 weeks. Don't count that Chiawana team out. They could easily rebound and beat one of these teams too. We talked about this last week, Andy. I still would be very surprised if somebody runs the table in this league, especially when you have four teams that are as good as those four.
I totally agree. I got a chance to see, I went out to Kennewick practice last week. If you listen to our second podcast in the week, I sat down with Miles Mayofsky, who's a standout all-state two-way level guy, who was a great, great interview. And it was really, really fun getting to know him. He's got a lot of great stories about their 2019 semifinal run that Kennewick made in Randy Affolter's first year after coming over from Ellensburg. He had great stories about his tattoos. Todd, whenever we sit down with a high school athlete, I always try to ask questions that they might not expect, or questions that are kind of, you know, quick hitters, open-ended questions. And sometimes, sometimes it's fruitless. Sometimes there's not really much there. But I opened the interview last week and said, hey, Miles, what's the inspiration behind your tattoos? And he said, well, I believe it was his grandpa had a health scare, and he put a Bible verse on him in dedicated to his grandpa. And his grandpa, you know, ended up making a recovery, and he's on the Kennewick staff, and he's very easy to notice because handlebar mustache does not do justice what this guy's facial hair looks like, Todd. It's unbelievable. He called it, I forget his exact word, but Miles is like, it's like a handlebar on steroids. So that being said, you know, Kennewick is still trying to find its legs on offense with a new quarterback. It has the most imposing line I've seen so far, this season outside of O'Day. And I think Kennewick, as we saw, it competed with O'Day in 2019, and it could do it again in the trenches. You know, you've got Ashton Tripp, you've got, just such a solid line there. Aiden Napick, Aiden's younger brother, Nathan Napick, is a little banged up. I'm not sure if he went on Friday. But Kennewick is going to be huge in the trenches and very tough defensively. But you're right about that MCC showdown. We're going to learn kind of a lot more this next week in week three. On Friday, I guess to back this up for my Friday game, I was at Gonzaga Prep in Eastmont, and that wasn't initially the plan. We were supposed to be at the Battle of the Bell, Mount Spokane Mead, and as I'm on the sidelines running up and down with my camera on Thursday, Todd, I'm checking Twitter, and I see a tweet from Dave Nichols of the Spokesman Review. It's, well, Mount Spokane Mead has been called off, and of course, that's just kind of the nature of this season so far, but that allowed me to get to see a Gonzaga Prep offense have a completely dominant ground attack against Eastmont. Wins that game 44-6. Ryan McKenna, player of the game, no surprise to either you, me, or anybody that's listening to this podcast. Ryan McKenna is the quarterback at Gonzaga Prep. He's been running the triple option since he was like 7 years old. He's Dave McKenna's son. He was a former ball boy, and he's a standout hockey player, and boy, does he hit hard. I mean, they had a running back. The Bullpups had a running back transfer. It's top running back entering the season leave and transfer over to Coeur d'Alene in northern Idaho. And there was a big question of behind McKenna at quarterback, you know, who's going to lead and really kind of round out this ground attack in the triple option. And in the first week, we saw Nick Banky do that. He's a great blocking back. He had a few touchdowns in a really strong game, more than 100 yards rushing in that first week. And sophomore Mateo Sacamano in the second week did the same thing. 187 yards, one touchdown, I believe. I'm not sure, based on what Eastmont returns, if Gonzaga Prep running over them, running for 431 yards, is a great indicator that this is a Bullpups team that's going to be a state contender. And you know, hey, we need to look out and just mint this team GSL champs in week two. But it does tell us that the Bullpups are capable of doing what they do really well again. And that's with an offensive line that replaced every starter coming in this offseason and a front seven on defense led by Ephraim Watkins, Kaz Melzer. They were even missing a linebacker, and that's a really strong defense over at Gonzaga Prep. So, Todd, preseason prognostication, I think we had a Gonzaga Prep either 3 or 4 in 4A in the preseason, and that's not looking bad here 2 weeks in.
Yeah, you mentioned Ryan McKenna. It's even when he has the ball in his hands and he's taken off in that triple option, he looks like the quarterback that's hunting the – or he looks like the linebacker hunting the quarterback. That's the kind of guy he is. He's seeking out the contact, but he's so – but he's cagey enough, he's fast enough to slip by guys and make big plays. I really like this Gonzaga Prep team. Andy, you mentioned that you really liked what you saw from that young offensive line or that inexperienced offensive line that they're trying to put together. We know they have a really good front seven. You know, nobody's going to hand this thing to Grant Kapausen or Lake Stevens or whoever emerges from the west side. Again, we've talked about this a lot. This is a team that's it's going to be a scary proposition come – you know, November and on in the 4A playoffs. If they can, you know, assuming they can get out of that very, very tough district in the crossover with the MCC.
Surprises, confirmations. Let's start with the team that has had maybe the most impressive start of the season outside of the confirmation that O'Day has showed us in you know, winning its first two games handily. The Yelm Tornadoes go in to Mount Si, drive up to Snoqualmie, and come out with a really impressive win by several touchdowns. That's a 3A team beating a pretty good 4A team in Mount Si. Is this, can we say, the most impressive first 2 weeks of anyone in the state, these Yelm Tornadoes?
I mean, Bellevue, you mentioned O'Day. Graham Kapausen hasn't allowed a point, but yeah, given the fact that they've played two really good teams the first 2 weeks, and again, it's Braden Platt, another strong performance on both sides of the ball, and then Kyler Ronquillo just seems to make plays. He had a punt return for a score that got the Tornadoes out of an early hole on Friday, a really good weapon in the pass game. This team plays with an edge. Yeah, I mean, you could make a case that this has been the most impressive team given the fact who they've played in the state.
Takeaways from that game can be found at the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington. Correspondent Doug Drowley was out at that game, and Mount Si, the lights went out in the middle of that one. So we had a Ravens 49ers Super Bowl incident going on. And, you know, I'm sure we'll be talking about Yelm here coming out in the next few weeks, but you know, Kyler Ronquillo, man, son of Jason Ronquillo, and he has a 76-yard punt return for touchdown. I'm not sure if he's a better receiver or lockdown corner. That just speaks to how impactful he is in every facet of the game. So Yelm with a really impressive first 2 weeks of the season after a week one win over Lincoln. The second team, Bellevue, runs over Kentwood 31-0. And, you know, a night that offensively wasn't as strong as Bellevue's opener, where it trounced Peninsula on the road, you know, 51-13. You know, Bellevue only ran for like 230 yards as a team. But at the same time, teams are going to have a really hard time moving the ball against this Bellevue group in Michael Knipe's fourth year as head coach, Todd. Those first 2 weeks were, I think, indicators that, you know, going into this week against a Lincoln team, Bellevue gets Lincoln of Tacoma at home. It was one of the games that we kind of circled, you know, early here in the non-league slate, is this is going to be a great non-league game that really tests, you know, who does what well. And you know, it's going to be an indicator of this 3A kind of state playoff picture early on. You know, I think we have to go into this week with Bellevue as the favorite of this game. You know, Lincoln, bounced back from a week one loss to Yelm with a good, solid win over Skyline, a shootout. Jabari Johnson, man, I'm sure his name will come up later, had an unbelievable night. But I think we got to look at this Bellevue team, which just keeps plugging in new dynamic runners. And, you know, George Kruger at linebacker having 10 tackles, 2 for loss, you know, here against Kentwood. Shutting out Kentwood 31-0, Bellevue gets a mention for me as kind of one of our three storylines confirmations here in week two.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered football long enough, Andy, to know it's one thing to go out and play, you know, play a team that likes to chuck it around. It's fun, and you're just loose, and you're just laughing, and you're having a good time. I don't know anybody who enjoys playing against the Wing T. And Michael Knipe and Bellevue, kind of going back to the old school roots of this program and being more Wing T based, and getting teams in the grind. It's like kind of getting people in the proverbial headlock. Nobody likes being in that. This Lincoln defense, you know, has not been fantastic the first 2 weeks. And this is a huge challenge for the Abes. They need to get this right. They need to play disciplined defense to have a chance in this game. It was good to see Jabari break out offensively. But again, I think Bellevue, I agree with you. I think Bellevue is the favorite in this game. Been very impressive. They've shown a few weapons on offense. A lot of guys have scored the first two games. This is a team that I think that we need to continue to watch out for, especially a team when we're talking about who can beat who can beat O'Day in 3A. I think this is a team that, as the season goes on, this is a team that we're going to have on the short list of teams that maybe could knock off the Irish.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we thought that in the preseason too, and they're kind of thinking, look, I think we have the personnel to do this thing. And is Bellevue going to jump from a perennial state playoff team back into that contender conversation that it was for so long under Butch Goncharoff? They like what they're putting together, and that coaching staff, feels like it's got things rolling, which it certainly does. One of the teams, we've mentioned this, we brought them up. The third kind of surprise confirmation of week two that I want to take a look at is Rainier Beach. They lose a tough one to Eastlake, a team that you saw in week one, Todd. Rainier Beach loses 17-16, but these guys are going to be a Metro League wild card. I mean, they hung with a good Eastlake team. They started off the season strong with the win. And as we kind of kick into gear for Metro League play, you know, we're not going to see, Rainier Beach take on a really good Metro League team for about 2 weeks now before it plays O'Day. And then, you know, Eastside and Prep later in the season. But this is a Rainier Beach team with a quarterback in Chance Gaudis who can get the ball up in the air, which it didn't really have in the spring. They have Jalen Green, a 6'5 receiver who's been a 3-year starter, is a Division I Power 5 level prospect. And then Caleb Presley coming off that game on Friday, Todd. He gets an offer from UCLA. He's a lockdown corner. He's a transfer from Eastside Catholic. His older brother played for Rainier Beach when they were, went to the state state finals a couple years ago. This is, and then of course, I haven't even mentioned Josh Connerly, the five-star O-lineman who's a real leader of this team on both sides of the ball. This Rainier Beach team is one that intrigues me just because you really don't know what you're going to get. It has the talent to hang with anybody and surprise anybody. And you know, it shouldn't be a surprise that it has playmakers all over the field and extremely tough to keep in track on track as a defense, looking at all those weapons. But can this team field enough play? You know, they're one COVID outbreak away from like a disaster. It's Rainier Beach has struggled with numbers in years past. It had the cancel, you know, kind of forfeited season early in the spring because of low numbers and just not being able to field a team safely. And so, you know, can this team that has a roster number in the low, you know, in the 30s, what are they going to be on a week-to-week basis? And can they kind of take that next jump back into Metro League, that upper tier with Seattle Prep, with, you know, O'Day, as we see Eastside, potentially floundering here?
Yeah, I mean, they have high-ceiling athletes. You've talked about that, Andy. And Corey Sampson deserves a ton of credit. You mentioned what happened last spring. They had to forfeit some games. The numbers dwindled dangerously low. Corey Sampson is the one that's keeping this together. And yes, they got a few guys to come in and they sort of replenished the cupboard, so to speak. But with their high-end talent in the skill positions, especially, and having an anchor lineman in Josh Connerly Jr., I think as long as they can keep their – as long as they don't hit a couple major injuries or a COVID outbreak, this is a team – I think any you ask anybody in the Metro League, they're going to say, "Yeah, heck yeah, this is the ultimate X factor." You know, I talked to Kyle Snell a little bit about this game. It came down to the wire. Rainier Beach shut Eastlake out in the second half, and it was interesting because he says, we don't see man-to-man coverage in the 4A Kinko very often. And Rainier Beach just kind of lets their athletes match up and say, if you can beat me, you beat me. And, if not for Harry Reid forcing a red zone turnover in the final minute, you know, Rainier Beach could have easily won that game, been 2-0, been knocking on the door of our top 10 rankings, but still a very, very good showing by Corey Sampson and his group. This is a team that I know the Metro League coaches feel is a very, very dangerous squad.
Our next segment, 3-3. I'm going to give three breakout, noteworthy individual performances. And then Todd, I see in the Zoom chat, the finger guns are ablazing. You must have seen that James Bond No Time to Die trailer. Just letting them fly. I've got three names, and I'm going to tack on one more because I like to bend my own rules. But it's going to start with Arlington quarterback Trent Novak, who broke his collarbone in the first game of the spring season after training really, really hard during the shutdown. Had kind of the wind taken out of his sails a little bit there in the spring. Obviously a devastating injury to have to miss his junior year. No junior film for him from a recruiting standpoint. He had 251 yards and 6 touchdowns in a blowout win over Oak Harbor here in week 2. That's coming off a week 1 performance where he threw for more than 308 yards and 4 touchdowns as well. Greg Daler, Arlington head coach, says that he's the most accurate quarterback that he's ever had there at Arlington. He said that he feels like he's really come in strong this senior season and is looking as good as he's ever looked. He can just make a lot of throws on the run, just really well-rounded and complete, has a good throwing motion, can do basically everything that he's asked of. And he's showing it here 2 weeks into the season. What in the world is that? wait, what was that? Is that you? Oh my goodness. All right, for the listener, Todd just showed a what do you call it? A fat head, a big cutout picture of a younger Todd Millis. I thought that was Trent Novak for a second as I was talking. I'm like, "What are you doing? Where'd you get that?"
When I my retirement party from the Tacoma News Tribune, they made about 20 of these fat heads of me when I had a mullet. I was probably still in my late 20s. So I just had it here in the front room, and you know, we got to have fun here on the podcast, man.
Well, you got to tweet out a picture of that thing, because, you know, again, this is an audio medium, and I really want every listener to get the experience I just had, going from looking at your face to seeing that, getting in a time machine and seeing Millis from 20 years ago. And I got to say, Todd, I just cut my hair for the first time in like 6 months last week. And if you had showed that to me a week earlier, maybe I would have known what I could aspire to from that mullet situation.
Hey, I'm an 80s child, man. Everybody had a mullet. Everybody wore it. We had long bangs, man. That's how we did it in the 80s. So it took me a little longer to cut my hair when 2000 hit.
Gosh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. So Trent Novak is my first name. You know, Arlington is going to be in that mix there at the top of the 3A Wesco. They play Ferndale here in week three, who I think, you know, the first two teams in that league and the first three teams we're going to be looking at are Marysville Pilchuck, Ferndale, and then Arlington. So week three, I think Novak's going to face his biggest test in a really tough Ferndale defense that's coming off a good win against Squalicum. Is that right? Ferndale just beat Squalicum? Linden, that's right. Like, yeah. Ferndale's coming off a big win over Linden and gets a really tough 3A Wesco league test here. Second name is, we've already talked about him, Henry Mercado. 236 yards passing, four touchdowns, another rushing touchdown. He's been as impressive as any quarterback in the state so far here in the first couple weeks of the season. Lots of momentum. My third name is Jaden Jones, Union running back. They call him Juice Box over there at Union. He ran for 216 yards on 22 carries against Mountain View. After Jack Coletto, listen to that. After Dom Coletto, Union quarterback, went down and left the game with an injury, Jaden Jones responds. He was a guy who's poised to have a really big season for them. He showed really, really nice moments last year. As kind of a scat back, running back option who can kind of get out in the passing game as well. He has a really, really nice burst and change of direction in kind of short yardage situations. He's a guy that you get him out in space in the flat and he can make people miss. He had Mark Naboo going completely the opposite way. He juked him out of his shoes in week one. I really like Jaden Jones as a running back, and I'm glad he was able to kind of show out in week two. The third name I'm going to bring up is Darren Cepeda, Le Center quarterback. 224 yards passing, 171 rushing yards in a win over 2A Woodland. John Lambert, head coach at Le Center, had big shoes to fill, replacing his son Tom, who's been that team's quarterback over the last 3 years. And going into the season, Lambert said, "Actually, I've got a guy that's been waiting in the wings that we're really excited about." And I got a chance to see him in a jamboree at Ridgefield. He's a fantastic runner, a good athlete who can sling the ball around. And, you know, like we said with these tests, you know, Le Center's 2-0 here and is in our 1A top rankings. It could be a team that challenges, for a state title. They've got two tests in the next 2 weeks in facing Kalama and Eatonville back-to-back. So we're going to see Darren Cepeda in some big game action here. I'll throw it to you, Todd, 3-on-3. Who are your three?
Well, we talked about him, Jabari Johnson. I mean, when you have, you know, 570 yards of offense in Lincoln Bowl, I mean, that's got to be on the short list of greatest performances in that historic site that goes back to, you know, the turn of the 20th century. This is the kind of breakout performance I think we're going to see more of. Maybe not 570 total yards. He had 372 passing yards, ran for 198 yards in the win against Skyline. We might not see in 570 every week, but I think this is the version of Jabari Johnson that we're going to see more of moving forward, as a guy who can beat you with his legs and beat you with his arms. The second standout is a guy that Glacier Peak picked up in the offseason. He transferred from Snohomish. His name's Trey Lechner. He's a big physical specimen, and won the starting tailback job in training camp. And, you know, first week, you know, ran for over 100 yards against his former school. And then this week he had 242 yard receiving and rushing yards combined and had 174 receiving yards in the win against Monroe. That's pretty impressive. 100 rushing yards the first week, 100 receiving yards the second week. A multifaceted guy that can beat you in many ways. And, oh, by the way, he can run you over too. He's a big kid. And, hey, I'm not going to forget there's another side of the ball here, Andy. Nathan Hale, school record 6 interceptions on Friday night in their win against Interlake. Shout out to Jaheim Fritz, cornerback. He's a standout lacrosse player. He led the team. He led that defense with 2 of the 6 interceptions. Big night for Nathan Hale football, especially on the defensive side of the football.
You told me a story over the weekend that I can't get over. Let's start there before I give a quick road story. Todd, give me let listeners in on an interaction you had with a young athlete this weekend on social media.
Different ways to be able to connect with student athletes these days, and a lot of that on social media. So, you know, I reached out to a student athlete trying to figure out game status on Friday night, and got a response that the game was on Saturday, and from this particular running back, and thanked him. And then a couple hours later, I mean, it surprised me. I got another DM that said, "Hey, I'm giving you a halftime update." He gave me a halftime update from his game. Now, he played in the game, so they must have been in the locker room, and he must have grabbed his phone and just said, "Hey, I'm going to give this reporter an update on us beating this particular team." And you know, it obviously drew a chuckle. You know, I think 20 years ago, I think some of the old school coaches that I've covered, if they knew that you know, their players were corresponding with the outside, the locker room world, I think they would blow a head gasket. So, but times have changed, man. And it was definitely kind of an amusing moment getting a score update while the game was in progress.
Can you imagine being in the middle of a game and just going, "Hey, let me just, you know, let this reporter, you know, a state over know what the score is"? I love it. I love it. And we're not naming him because we're not snitches. You hear that? We don't want to get this guy in trouble. Just think it's hilarious. I can't imagine his coach looks over and says, "Hey, what are you doing with your phone? What's going on?" But I love it.
I just hope that 150 players that potentially might be candidates of that, I hope 150 players across the state aren't doing bear crawls on Monday. Coach is trying to snuff out the unnamed player. So, coaches, don't do that to your players. It might not even be in your state.
Mine has to do with pregame routines, because that's a question I've been asking players in just kind of as a way to lighten up interviews. It's like, "Hey, what's your pregame routine?" Every player's answer is different. I think back to when I was in high school, we had team dinners before games. We'd walk over to 7-Eleven across the street and get a Gatorade or whatnot. And I asked Miles Mayofsky last week on this podcast what his pregame routine is. And it was, he said he'd go to Yolk's, the grocery store, get some fried chicken. And, you know, that think a fried chicken sandwich it was. That's his pregame routine. I went over to Richland. This interview is going to be played in our next podcast, Todd. But Elijah Rodriguez of Richland, pregame routine. Going from school, head to the gas station, pick up a Monster energy drink. I can't remember the flavor, but quick little fuel with energy. I'm sure, you know, he makes his school's nutritionist quake in his boots with that. But hey, it works, man. That guy is a stud. You know, first team MCC defensive lineman. I got to ask you, Todd, before you go to cover games, do you have a pregame routine?
Yeah, it's usually coffee. You know, it's not just the game for us, as you know, Andy. It's
Starbucks after games.
No, I don't. I'm not a Starbucks guy. Yeah. It's usually I have a coffee stand here that I'll get something at you know, right before it closes and head off. It's a long night, as you know. You know, I like to get there an hour early, and you know, if I shut off the computer by 2 a.m., then that's a pretty good night. So yeah, I need the fuel that way. I need the caffeine fuel. So that's where I go.
My answer is unimaginably coffee as well. I try to get to games, you know, an hour plus early just to get our bearings straight. But I don't have any fun pregame routines. But then again, I'm not strapping on pads and throwing myself between the lines. So that requires, you know, something a little more. Coming up on Wednesday, now this podcast is 2 times a week, so please tune in, subscribe where you get podcasts. You know, this podcast will get to you right after the weekend of games, and then our next podcast will come on Wednesday as a look ahead at the following week. So taking a look at week 3, stay tuned in the feeds. We'll have a podcast that drops on Wednesday. We've got some great games ahead. Spanaway Lake and Lake Stevens return to action after 2 weeks of a COVID shutdown. We've got Lake Stevens at O'Day, Lincoln at Bellevue, Ridgefield Hawkinson down in the 2A GSHL. You heard me right, Todd. Puyallup Sumner, to name a few. For SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, I've been Andy Bueller. Thank you for listening. We will be back on Wednesday. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. Thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. This song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week. Before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert, Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today.